Hello, Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network listeners. I am Jeff Hawkins, co-host of Shake Them Ropes, with a very special announcement. If it's been a while or you've never listened to us before, the original gang is back, myself and Rob McCarron, back talking wrestling. We have no idea where this show's going to go, where we're going to keep any of the old bits or any of the old things in there. It's going to be a process. It's going to be a journey, and we'd like for you to come along with us. Only on Shake Them Ropes on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
Hello, do you like New Japan Pro Wrestling? Are you a Shin Nihon freak? If so, check out the Super J-Cast with Joel and Damon on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network.
And even if you fucking hate New Japan Pro Wrestling, listen to the Super J-Cast anyway. Not just for our great show reviews, analysis, and pastrami sandwiches, but there's also usually some dick jokes somewhere in the obligatory opening 30 minutes of absolute nonsense we chat about every single week. That's the Super J-Cast for all the best talk about New Japan Pro Wrestling, crisps, and pornography.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to Jumping Bomb Audio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Jumping Bomb Audio, the number one show all about the world of Joshi Pro Wrestling. My name is Taylor, and I am here once again going it solo on this episode. Unfortunately, Kelly still not able to join us. But the good news is I talked to him recently, and we are very hopeful that he will be back for the next episode. But for now, it will be me going it alone. Plenty to talk about on this episode. A big Stardom show, a big Tokyo Joshi show, and much more. So let's dive right in. But before we do, have to get to the plugs. As always, follow us on Blue Sky at J-Bomb Audio. You can follow Kelly at Comic Geek Kelly. You can follow me at Tame Aimbow on Blue Sky. Subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice. And if that app of choice is Apple Podcasts, we would really appreciate a 5-star rating and review. And if you're feeling extra generous, you can donate to the show at redcircle.com/shows/jumping-bomb-audio. So let's get into it here. First thing we'll be talking about, got some Stardom shows before we talk about their big show. Of the last 2 weeks, they had a Korakuen Hall show on the 27th of October. Two title matches there, both retentions. Mei Sierra retaining the high-speed title over Waka Tsukiyama. And the Goddesses of Stardom titles, Natsuka Tora and Ruaka, successfully defending against the Mi Vida Loca duo of Itsuki Aoki and Rina Yamashita. Also on that Korakuen Hall show, Fua-chan appearing. You may remember her. She is the Japanese celebrity who had, I believe, a handful of matches a few years back. I believe that was 2023. Has not been back since. This is all stuff I had to catch on when she re-popped up. I believe what happened is that after she appeared for Stardom, she composed a tweet telling, I believe, a fellow comedian or something of that type to commit suicide, which was not well received by the Japanese public. Fuwa-chan pulled out of the public eye and has been out of the public eye since that time, which I believe was about a year and a half ago, if what I read was correct. So appeared on this Stardom show, looks to be jumping back into Stardom. This is her first sort of major appearance after that scandal, and discussed briefly when she appeared about some of that. So will be coming back. I think was fairly successful when she was here last, you know. A lot different to become a regular or more regular member of the roster as opposed to just popping in for those handful of matches. But we will see. Also will be interesting because that obviously was back in the Arasi era. So a different era here. But we'll be interested to see what happens there from an in-ring perspective, from an out-of-ring perspective. But that was the big news there. There was a New Blood 26 on October 30th. The New Blood tag team titles changing hands. Aya Sakura and Sayaka Karara defeated the champions Hanako and Waka Tsukiyama to win those titles. So the champions fall there. But the big show of the last 2 weeks for Stardom was Crimson Nightmare, which happened on November 3rd. I think sort of looking at the card, seeing the placement, being very close to the tag league, maybe not one of their bigger feeling shows, although now that Saya has both the World of Stardom title and the New Japan Strong title, this show was headlined by a Hate versus Hate double title match, so maybe a little bit of juice there. We won't talk about every match on the show, just the bigger matches, but I will run down some of the results of the opening matches. Rion defeated Fukigen Death, Kikyo Furusawa, and Rani Yagami in a four-way match in 6 minutes and 18 seconds. There was a three-way 15-person tag team match between Cosmic Angels, Mi Vida Loca, and God's Eye. That was won by Cosmic Angels. That match going 11 minutes and 33 seconds, so less than a minute per participant. I think the very definition of a get everyone on the card match. There was a tag team match, the Neo Genesis duo of Azumi and Miyu Amasaki defeating Hanako and Waka Tsukiyama. So their tough week continued. The Stars trio of B Priestley, Momo Kogo, and Saya Iida defeated Natsuka Tora, Rina, and Ruaka. And then we get to the upper portion of the show. Next match, maybe a little bit debatable whether it was actually on the upper portion of the show. But Bozilla defeating Saki Kashima in 11 minutes and 29 seconds. Not well reviewed, I will say, on Cage Match. Currently trending at 5.63 out of 10. But I have to say, I very much enjoyed this match. Yes, it was goofy. It went 11 and a half minutes, which is quite a long time. Maybe slightly overstayed. It's welcome. But of course, started with some pretty standard comedy. Saki attempting to walk out of the match before it began. Siri was at ringside, encouraging her to get back in the ring, which she eventually did. I think the thing I really liked about this match, I think it still had a little bit of that sort of, you know, big monster against little coward thing, where all of a sudden, to keep the match going, like, the little coward has to just do something and all of a sudden be better, which sometimes doesn't make sense. But I thought that they were smart in that maybe, I don't remember how far into the match it was, maybe halfway through. It was clear Bozilla had the match won, went for a pin at two, lifted up Saki, so the three wasn't counted, then went to do it again. And at two, once again, pulled up Saki and then went to finally pin her. And Saki grabbed a hold of the ropes. So I thought it was a good, something a little bit different in that there was a very clear delineation of, you know, Bozilla would have won the match at that point, sort of got overly confident, messing around. I think sometimes in these matches, the reversal of fortune in terms of, oh, the monster's dominating and this person who's going to get totally squashed is, you know, about to lose. And then all of a sudden, it's just sort of a random moment of like the person being like, I'm not going to lose. Here we go. And it's just sort of like, okay, I don't really buy it because this happens in every match. I liked that there was a very clear moment of Bozilla getting a little bit too, you know, big-headed, whatever you want to say, too confident, you know, lifting her up twice. You're giving someone not, you know, at that point, a nine count to get up because you're lifting them up twice. And then on the third one, grabbing the rope. You know, there was a lot of sloppiness. There was a number of moments when they went for things and it didn't work. Some of them worked out sort of better than others. There was a moment when I think Bozilla was going to powerbomb Saki off the ropes and then lost her footing but kept the powerbomb. So that one didn't go wrong, but there were some like Hurricanrana, Poison Rana things that didn't really work. Like, it looked like Saki was going for a Poison Rana on Bozilla at one point, which I can't imagine was what was supposed to happen. But then it just sort of fell apart, and it was not like they both sort of fell over, and then it was like, oh, Saki has a leg lock, headlock. So I think at the end of the day, I didn't even really rate this because, you know, how much of a match is it really? Because it's, oh, Saki is scared. Oh, she's getting the shit beat out of her. But I enjoyed it, especially going in, having seen so many of this type of match that you're like, yep, this is going to be what it is. Thought it was enjoyable. You know, not something to go out of your way to watch, but I enjoyed it for what it was. Then we got into the serious part of the show with the three title matches. The first one was the high-speed title. May Sierra, the champion, defeating Hazuki in 10 minutes and 58 seconds. I have to say, personally, not sure how others feel about it. Stardom has gotten rid of the new, I guess you would call them, high-speed rules, which was the 2 out of 3 falls, the time limit, the short time limit, 10 minutes. They have gotten rid of those. I think it's probably for the best. I sort of appreciate the idea of trying to make this title a little bit different other than people run fast when they're in the match. I actually think going to either one or the other, like being like, this is a 2 out of 3's fall title, 2 out of 3 falls title, or this is a short time limit title, make it a little bit more interesting. I think doing both together sort of puts it in a weird corner of, you know, the flaw with all, I think, 2 out of 3 matches, at least from my opinion, is that people, especially when you don't do it, you know, like CMLL does 2 out of 3 fall matches, you know, the majority are, I know they do some single fall matches, but the majority of their matches are 2 out of 3 falls matches. So you get in the mindset of, here's how these matches work, here is what goes on, here's the timing. I think in a promotion like Stardom, where everything is mostly single fall, and especially in a promotion that has leaned further and further into the sort of epic, you know, New Japan-esque style of the main events go 25 minutes, you know, even not main events go 20 minutes, 15 minutes. It's very difficult to do a 2 out of 3 falls match, especially one that has to go under 10 minutes if you have an actual result, because then you're talking about you're having at least one fall within 10 minutes. And if you want to have a result, you've got to have 2 falls in 10 minutes. It just seems a little bit odd in a world where these matches go long. You know, we just talked about Bozilla and Saki Kashima, what is largely a squash match going almost 12 minutes. And then you're talking about, this is a title match, so it should be two people who are super talented. It will probably take longer than 12 minutes to decide that if Saki Kashima getting squashed by Bozilla takes 12 minutes. You know, it puts the title sort of back in the position of, what is it? As I said, it's sort of the We Run Around Fast title, which I can get into, but sort of limits the type of people who you're sort of positioning for this title. But, I thought this match, back to this match, I thought it was, you know, fun enough, nothing too crazy except for when Mei Sierra looked like she got spiked on her head on a Poison Rana almost near the end. Pretty standard. I enjoyed it. I went 3.5 stars. Didn't blow me away, didn't super wow me, but I sort of enjoyed it. Was like, hey, great, you know, happy to have the high speed title rules back as regular rules, but other than that, didn't really stick out too much to me. The semi-main of the show was the Wonder of Stardom title, a big title change, Konami defeating Starlight Kid in 21 minutes and 15 seconds. Thought this was pretty enjoyable. Didn't wow me, wasn't spectacular. They certainly went hard-hitting at the beginning. You know, the obvious drawback of every hate match is you're going to get the hate interference. I actually thought this match went slightly too long. I think as a 16, 17 minute match, probably would have been a little stronger. Not crazy about the results. You know, Starlight Kid has had the title for a little bit, so not so much objecting to her losing the title, especially if they're going to do something more with her, but you know, Konami, I think at this point, it feels a little bit, not even that they missed the boat. This is her first singles title in the promotion. It just feels to me like she is not quite the wrestler she was a couple years ago. And I'm not super confident in, you know, like this match enough, went 3.75 stars, thought it was really solid. But Starlight Kid, I think, is probably in the top 3 workers in this company, in my opinion. So half the match is great. You know, if we're looking at Konami versus, you know, Bea Priestley, for example, if she's getting a push to Wonder of Stardom, am I excited by this match? I mean, Bea Priestley's probably a bad example to put there, but it's another thing we talk about a lot. You know, is Konami someone who can lead a number of people through and into great matches in this position the way that I think Starlight Kid can and a number of other people on this roster can and could? I'm not sure that that answer is yes. Also, larger picture, we're now talking about Hate having the tag titles. They now have the Wonder of Stardom title. They now have the World of Stardom title. You know, and I know that Saya has separated herself, not in storyline, but sort of a little bit mentally, has separated herself at least a little bit from the shenanigans that Hate usually gets into, just by sort of being a better wrestler than most other people in the group. But just the idea of an up and down card of Hate shenanigans, I know it's a very basic, you know, oh, we put the titles on the heels and then, you know, some baby face will come in and they'll get the big win. And I'm like, great, that's all great. I don't know that I want to see that with three different titles in the same company. So again, I thought the match was solid, not blow away. I went 3 3/4. And we'll have to see what happens with the reign of Konami. Then in the main event, as I mentioned, it was that double title match, the World of Stardom title, the New Japan Strong title, Saya Kamatani successfully defeating Momo Watanabe in 21 minutes and 30 seconds. Another match, I think I sort of felt this way about the show, as I mentioned at the outset. Just this show felt like, even with this double title, Hate versus Hate, felt like an inessential show, I think, going in. I don't think there was anything really on the show that changed my mind to that fact. I think we're in sort of a strange November, December, or at least November, beginning of December, I think is always sort of a strange time for Stardom. You know, we go into the tag league, which is usually, at least for me, not something too exciting. We're sort of looking ahead to the end of December, the beginning of January, when it's sort of like, hey, big things were happening. They announced a lot of matches after this show, you know, Saya vs. Siori. You know, that's exciting. It's already sort of look ahead. It feels a little bit, and this show feels a little bit, as we've talked about with one or two other shows in the year, feels a little bit more like that old Rossi, well, we've got to have a show every month, so here's the show. You know, Konami wins the title, so some big, at least, movement there, as opposed to some of those older shows where it would just be like, hey, I don't think anyone is winning the title. No new champions. It would be no new champions, and you'd move on. But thought it was solid. I actually thought it was a little sleepy until they did the Hurricanrana off the apron, and then it picked up a lot, but never super grabbed me. I went 4 stars because I thought the work was good, but it's really a show overall. I think if you missed it in, you know, a month or two, you're not going to be sitting there thinking, ah, I can't believe I didn't go back and watch that show. After the main event, Momo Watanabe announcing she is taking some time off. She has a nagging knee injury that she needs to take care of. I think there was some hope that she would maybe turn babyface in this match, or there'd be some movement there, but didn't happen. Wondering if it's because, you know, if you're going to turn her babyface, there's no reason to do that and then have her go out for many months. So they may be waiting on that. Maybe she'll come back as something different. But again, I thought it was a solid match, well worked, didn't pop off the page for me. I think, again, overall, as I said, the show very solid, but nothing really that I think you'd feel too bad about missing, in my opinion. So that was Crimson Nightmare. And now we are into the world of the Goddesses of Stardom Tag League. The Tag League currently is in the midst, I believe they've had 2 shows. No, they've had 3 shows, sorry. And the current standings are, there's 2 blocks, Red Goddess and Blue Goddess block. I'll start from the bottom. Down at 0 points, Waka Tsukiyama and Rion with 0. All stuck on 2 currently are Natsukatora and Ruwaka, Bozilla and Akira Kuragana, Yuna Mizumori and Mei Sierra, Hina and Rana Yagami and Seri and Miku Kanai. That the most interesting team in this tournament to me. But at the top of the Red Goddess block is Natsupoi and Seri Ano and a mysterious team called Dos Locas de Mexico, the Crazies of Mexico. I should mention that Hazuki and Koguma pulled out of the tournament.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.5 billion back to our customer owners over the last 9 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
A few days before it began, and were replaced by this mysterious team of masked wrestlers called the Crazies of Mexico. So read into that what you will, and we'll move on. On the other block, the Blue Goddess block, there are three teams down at 0 points. That's Suzu Suzuki and Rina Yamashita, Aya Sakura and Sayaka Kurara, and Ami Sorei and Lady C. Two teams at 2 points, Konami and Rina, Azumi and Miyu Amasaki, and three teams tied for the lead at 4 points, Hanako and Megan Bain, Suri and Saki Kashima, and Saya Ida and B. Priestley. So that tournament, of course, will continue on for the next little while. But what else has been happening in Joshi? Tokyo Joshi had their latest Korakuen Hall show on November 9th. Just happened actually a few hours before this recording. In front of 730 fans, a solid, very solid number. If you remember back to, well, first of all, that Tokyo Joshi has cut back on the number of Korakuens that they've done this year. They were running almost once a month. I believe this is their fifth Korakuen Hall show this year, and I believe final Korakuen Hall show this year. The February show, which was the Max Heart Tournament, drew 550, raised some eyebrows as to that low attendance. But since then, Miyu Yamashita has been in the main event of every Korakuen Hall show, and every Korakuen Hall show has gotten at least 730 fans. This show getting 730 exactly, which I consider a very good number, considering the, I would say, the type of matches on the show. You know, I think they were very, you know, showcasing a lot of rookies. Not really high profile, who could win, anyone could win, there could be a title change type of show. You know, obviously a new Gaijin in J-Rod in the main event. So very good to see that they got 730 fans there. We'll be interested to see on their January 4th show, which has now been announced. I guess I'll just start with this. With Miyu Watanabe and Suzume in the main event, another Miyu main event. They drew just over 1,400 people last year, so interested to see if they could top that and maybe get closer to 1,500 or into 1,600. Not sure what their layout allows in terms of max capacity, but Miyu, at least in a small anecdotal way, has shown that she's got the ability to draw people in. I mean, again, that 550 number in February with what was not a nothing match. You know, the Max Heart Tag Tournament is not the biggest event of Tokyo Joshi's year, but certainly is not a nothing. So to outdraw that multiple times by up to 200 fans, for Miyu, I think is at least a little feather in her cap. So we'll quickly run through again the lower matches on this show. There was an 8-person tag team match. Chika Nanase, Ren Kanatsu, Rika Tatsumi, and Ryo Mizunami defeating Hyper Masao, Kakeru Sekiguchi, Mihiro Kiryu, and Mifu Ishida. Mizuki and Suzume teamed up in a 4-way tag team match to defeat Haru Kazushiro and Yuki Aino, Kaya Toribami and Miyu Yamashita, and Palm Harajuku and Raku. And then there was a tag team match, Hiroyo Matsumoto and Yuki Arai defeating Toga and Yuna Manase. Then we went straight into the title matches. 4 title matches on this show. The first one, the MLW Women's World Featherweight title match. Shoko Nakajima retaining against Viva Van in 1258. Viva Van returning to Tokyo Joshi. Thought this match was solid. I thought it was the best Viva Van performance that I've seen in Tokyo Joshi. Haven't really seen a ton of her outside of Tokyo Joshi, so not sure if it's a general improvement, not sure if it's a familiarity with Tokyo Joshi improvement, or if it's a working Shoko Nakajima improvement. As I've said before, I think Shoko Nakajima is the most solid wrestler on all the Tokyo Joshi roster. Looked really good here. Thought the match was fun. Did what it needed to do, not blow away, but was very happy with it. The next match was the International Princess title match, and that was Ariso Endo retaining against Uta Takami in 11 minutes and 15 seconds. Another match I very much enjoyed. I think the good thing about Uta is clearly has some way to go in the in-ring skill, but really does a good job covering for it with just pure energy. I think she brings a lot of energy to the match. I thought that she matched well with Endo. They delivered a solid match, but never really felt like, oh, this is just sort of a rookie here to take the loss. Because they had that energy, match seemed to move, didn't overstay its welcome. And so I thought really was less about, oh, Endo defending her title, and more about Uta sort of taking that next step, getting the title match, showing her potential, and I thought she did very well here. So happy to see that. The semi-main of the show was for the Princess Tag Team titles, the champions Ober Eats, Wakano Uehara, and Yuki Kamifuku defeating Himawari and Shino Suzuki in 16 minutes, 38 seconds. Again, another match like the Endo Takami match where the rookies, I thought, had a good showing. Didn't think it was quite as good as the Takami showing in the International Princess title match. But I think Himawari is and has been pretty solid for a while. Shino improving. I'm interested to see where she goes because she still is carrying quite a bit of sort of comedy stylings. You know, she does the gimmick of doing the quote-unquote tour. So she was saying, oh, here's going to be the loser of the tag title match, pointing to Wakano when she was in the corner. So still has a little bit of that comedy. I thought that she looked pretty good in the closing stretches of the match. I think the biggest thing here is focus really has to be on Wakano because I think Yuki in these type of matches is not quite rising to the occasion. I think Wakano sort of learning and growing, but just struggling a bit with Yuki in these matches because I don't think there's the sort of next level, you know, come along with me. Even Endo had a little bit of it with Takami where it's like, I'm going to bring you in. You're less experienced, but we're going to go together and the ship is going to rise. Don't really see that. So I thought that this match was fairly skippable. Nothing bad. Nothing went terribly wrong, but just sort of a match that ends and you go, okay, and life moves on. Which brings us to the main event, the Princess of Princess title match. Miyu Watanabe, the champion, defeating J-Rod in 12 minutes and 55 seconds. I adored this match. I thought it was really good. I know John from Wrestling Omakase went 4 stars on it. I was even higher than that. I thought it was really good. I would have gone like 4... probably 4.25, even maybe 4.5. I just thought it was a perfectly worked match, sort of a rarer match in terms of Tokyo Joshi. You know, this is sort of a match that you would see more. We talk all about it in Stardom, sort of that Gaijin of the month or the feared Gaijin. You know, you think about Viper coming in or something like that, sort of that, you know, Beast of the Month match. And it was very interesting that J-Rod came in and really just played the heel. A very sort of classic 80s, 90s heel, you know, coming in sort of scowling, throwing Miyu around, which is something we don't see that often. You know, I had never seen J-Rod, or if I've ever seen J-Rod, I didn't remember ever having seen her wrestle. I'm going to say something that's going to seem like an insult, but I'm going to bring it back around. You know, I think in this match, there wasn't anything I saw that I was like, whoa, she's really good. You know, this is amazing. What an in-ring worker. The thing I was so impressed with, though, is I thought that she just played her part perfectly in the match. It didn't stick out. You know, she was where she needed to be. She made Miyu look good. I mean, the giant swing, I don't know if J-Rod has anything to do with that. I don't know the physics of, you know, the wrestling giant swing. That giant swing looked amazing. With J-Rod, this very quote-unquote tall wrestler, comparatively, you know, really being flung around. I mean, Miyu was getting speed on that swing. It isn't like, you know, some of these giant swings, we talked about it with the Marigold show and Chika Goto, you know, you get a big person in there and you're like, oh, they just managed to get them up. That's an amazing feat. You know, had Miyu gotten J-Rod up and just swung her around maybe once or twice with a lot of effort, it would have been like, whoa, she can get her up. I mean, she picked her up and they went. And it was really great. It was really great seeing, you know, interesting between the Yuki match from the last Korakuen and now this match, seeing sort of Miyu as going toe-to-toe or being, I think, a little bit, or maybe a lot of bit, the underdog in this match, fighting from underneath. I think that's something that really no one else on the roster, except for, you know, Aja Kong, who isn't on the roster, or like Max the Impaler, could provide to Miyu. I just thought it was a perfectly worked sort of throwback match. Nothing, they didn't do spectacular, insane, incredible moves. It was just really well worked. It's like, hey, here's a person who's really scary. You know, they start off with the shoulder tackle and Miyu doesn't get the shoulder tackle. And that's the moment of like, whoa, you know, this is different than usual. That shoulder tackle usually always works. And, you know, I was surprised. I mean, Miyu, that giant swing, to go back to the giant swing, she has gotten it over because she was against the ropes and she started touching her hair and the crowd murmured. Like, she wasn't in the middle tightening it. Like, the crowd sensed it might be coming and got excited. So I think there's a lot good going on here, but I just thought this was great. Classic pro wrestling, babyface versus heel, fighting from underneath, you know. Miyu getting powerbombed. She's not often getting powerbombed in these things. And so I just thought it was really well worked. I thought it was really smart. You know, didn't overstay its welcome. It was 4 minutes, almost 4 minutes shorter than the tag title match. It was less than 13 minutes. You know, to me, I was surprised seeing 12:55. Not that it felt long, but I thought it was perfectly managed in terms of length. I thought they did what they need to do. J-Rod looked good, you know, power bombing Miyu, fighting, and then Miyu hitting that spinning teardrop, which I think looks so much better than the standard teardrop for the win. So have to say, I think of any match I saw in the past 2 weeks, this is the one I would say to go out of your way to watch, because I thought it was really strong. Another really strong defense for Miyu, another feather in her cap. As she continuously continues to build her case for being, I would say, a top wrestler in all of wrestling. And I think this speaks to that with some big assistance from J-Rod. So definitely one to check out. Rest of the show, if you don't see it, don't think you're missing much. But the main event is definitely worth watching. All right, what else was happening in Joshi? Ice Ribbon had an Ice Infinity number one contender match, which was won by Kirara Wakana defeating Totoro Satsuki. Wave had a show on November 2nd. Saran and Yumi Oka winning the tag titles from Mai Yukihi and Risa Sera. Getting the titles off of Sarah as she heads towards her retirement. And Itsuki Aoki defeating Kohaku to win the Regina DeWave titles. So a sort of shocking result there. Choco Pro had Emi Sakura's 30th anniversary show. Probably the highlight for Joshi fans. There were some other matches, you know, Hayabusa and Masato Tanaka teaming up to take on Balianaki and Chris Brooks. But probably the Joshi highlight would be Azumi defeating Mei Tsuruga. Very high rating currently on Cage Match, 9.02 out of 10. I probably would have gone 4 stars. Might have been slightly biased by seeing that 9.02 and getting very excited. I thought it was a solid match. About what you expect. I don't think Azumi and Mei Tsuruga really pulled out the big guns, the big bombs in this match, but I thought it was well worked. Lots of interesting pinning. You know, I think it also had a little sense of that sort of, you know, it's a 30th anniversary show. It's a special show. They did some sort of goofy stuff outside the ring. You know, Starlight Kid was there and Mei Tsuruga is slapping Starlight Kid. So it took a while also to get into, because the beginning of the match was sort of that, oh, it's a special show, and part of it is, you know, oh, we're all having a good time, before they really got into the meat of the match. But a solid show. It's on YouTube, so very easy to check out. And then the main event of that show was a gauntlet match, which was one that featured Mei Tsuruga, Riho, Momoe Nakanishi, Aoi Kazuki and Kiri Yoniyama. That was one. Mei pinned Emi Sakura. I mean, Emi Sakura got pinned 4 out of 5 times in the match, so didn't really win, but more of a tribute to Emi Sakura and her 30 years in the biz. So that is everything that happened in the last 2 weeks. Coming up, well, as I mentioned, the Stardom Tag League continues. That will take up the most of the remaining month and a half or so of Stardom schedule. Seedling has a show on November 14th. That will feature Natsu Sumire and Mio Shirai defending their tag titles against Misa Kagura and Sumika Yanagawa. Oz will have the retirement show for Sonoko Kato on November 23rd. We're getting into that retirement period. Risa Sera going to be retiring soon as well. It was announced that she's going to have, I believe, her final match against Suzu Suzuki. Hoping or imagining they may do that show somewhere where they can have it be a death match, but we will see. And then some bigger shows happening. Marigold has a Korakuen Hall on November 17th. Miko Aono will have a singles match, non-title, against Chika Goto. Misa Matsui and Chiaki will defend their newly won tag titles against the super rookie team of Victoria Yuzuki and Sari Yamaoka. And Mayu Iwatani will defend her Superfly title against Coco, who is a 15-year-old wrestler, has done sort of the smaller, has done some Just Step Out, has been in Freedoms, and has popped up in Marigold and challenged Mayu. So that will be an interesting match to see. Sendai Girls has a big show on November 16th because it is Chihiro Hashimoto's 10th anniversary show. Matches on that card, Chi-Chi and Soy versus Yuna and Yura Suzuki. Senka Akatsuki versus Spike Nishimura. Shin Sakura Hirota versus Yu, also retiring soon, versus Aja Kong. A fun tag match, Natsupoi and Aya Sakura versus Mio Momono and Yurika Oka. Maria will take on Dash Chizako. As of now, not a hardcore match, but we'll see if that changes. Takumi Aroha will team with Veni to take on Mika Iwata and Miyuki Takase. And finally, the main event, Seri will face off against Chihiro Hashimoto. Seri, a freelancer, so appearing everywhere. Seri, a former Sendai Girls World Champion, so we'll be interested to watch that and see. It is non-title, but would imagine a Seri win might get her a title shot, which will be interesting to see. And then on November 27th, Mika Iwata's 10th anniversary show is happening. And in Mika Iwata fashion, there are no matches announced for that show. So we'll have to see what happens. Not happening for another almost 2 weeks, so not totally surprising there. And also, the final show coming up in the next 2 weeks is Seriism 9. That's right, the 9th Seriism show. 4 matches on this card. Yurika Oka will take on Celine Mazora. Chi-Chi and Miku Kanai will face Akira Kurigane and Rani Yagami from Stardom. Nightshade and Veni will face off against the interesting duo of Bozilla and Kiro Ito. And the main event, back to a tag team main event for Seriism. Seri and Suzu Suzuki will take on Chihiro Hashimoto and Natsupoi. So that should be an interesting match. And that is everything coming up in the next 2 weeks of Joshi. So we will be back. And by we, I hope we mean both Kelly and I will be back in 2 weeks to talk to you all about it. Until then, enjoy Joshi and see you later.
Hi, I'm Case Lowe, co-host of the Open the Voice Gate podcast. The one question I'm constantly asked when it comes to Dragon Gate is how do I get into the promotion? Well, stop asking and start listening to the Open the Voice Gate podcast, released every Wednesday on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. For exclusive news and show reviews, look no further than the leader in Dragon Gate coverage, Open the Voice Gate.
Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.